Hi, this is Saqib Rahman from the OrthoClips podcast series. And today I'm interviewing Dr. Noelle Larson. She's professor of orthopedics in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at the Mayo Clinic. And today we're going to talk about implant density in adolescent idiopathic scoliosis fusion. Can we use fewer screws? Thanks, Dr. Larson, for coming on the podcast. Appreciate it.
My pleasure to be here.
So I saw your study in the journal Bone and Joint Surgery, and this looks like this was quite an effort and a randomized trial in a large group, and wanted to hear a little more about it. So the title of your paper was The Effect on Implant Density on Adolescent Idiopathic Scoliosis Fusion, Results of the Minimize Implants, Maximize Outcomes Randomized Clinical Trial. So if you don't mind, maybe even before we get into the details of study, like how did you get interested in this study? Some background here, both on the topic and you personally, how you got on this.
For sure. My training is in pediatric orthopedics, and I have always enjoyed spine surgery, but I was a brand new faculty at University of Minnesota with Dr. David Polly, and my office was actually across the hall. So in the mornings, we'd come in and we'd talk ideas, and he challenged me, can you do a randomized controlled trial looking at routine scoliosis surgery and figure out how many screws do we actually need? Because basically at that time point, circa 2011, at meetings, various surgeons would show their implant constructs, and some patients would have screws at every single vertebra, and other surgeons preferred a lower implant density construct, or say using 14 screws for a 10 level fusion as opposed to 20 screws. So it was really a challenge and a collaboration with Dr. Polly and all of our 14 sites. But we decided this was an important enough question to try and answer. And then we got a consortium of researchers and surgeons from various institutions together to really design the study.
Okay. I can see how that came together. Obviously not very easy. And I'm sure that was probably a long time ago when you first got the idea and we're talking about it. So tell us more about the basic study design. How did you set this up, the centers involved, and then we'll maybe get into what you found.
For sure. We found a group of about 20 other surgeons, and we started meeting about twice a year, usually at the same time of some of our annual meetings, such as Scoliosis Research Society. And we did some quality studies to determine, you know, what's the bare number minimum of screws that we're comfortable using from a safety standpoint. And we basically looked at a lot of different x-rays together and reviewed actually some biomechanical data from our colleagues in Montreal, Dr. Aubin at Ecole Polytechnique. Our initial concept was, could we randomize patients to typical care, which is for most of these surgeons high density, versus fewer screws with kind of a computer designed or biomechanically optimized array, where you skip certain pedicles or you, for different curve patterns that are more flexible, you may not need as many screws. Basically, about 2 years in, the surgeons kind of rebelled to that concept, and they came and said, we want a bag of screws. So we either want to be given 18 or more or 14 or fewer for 10 level fusion, we don't want to be subject to biomechanical models in the OR. So it was really a give and take process with the collaborators and with the surgeons, because when you do a randomized controlled trial, you have to make sure that everybody in the group has equipoise. The surgeon has to be able to look at their patient and say, I feel equally comfortable doing either of the two study arms. Otherwise, recruitment becomes exceedingly difficult and also maybe even unethical, right? If you don't truly believe in the question, it's hard to randomize a patient, particularly a pediatric healthy patient, to a novel choice. So it was basically designed as a trial of equivalence. And we had 14 sites. We picked the most common scoliosis curve type, which is a right thoracic curve around 50 degrees. And then patients were randomized to high density versus lower density. The surgeons were not blinded because they had to perform the surgery, but the patients and parents were blinded until after the surgery.
Did you do a pilot study or a smaller study, perhaps, before embarking on this design?
We had a clinical trials planning grant from Orthopedic Research Education Foundation, and that basically funded the biomechanical work and funded these kind of equipoise feasibility survey studies. In addition, we did a willingness to enroll study where we surveyed patients who had all types of scoliosis. So we surveyed the patient and the parent and asked about their willingness to enroll. And we showed them kind of our templated patient family education pamphlet and then said, imagine that you're having surgery. Imagine your surgeon approached you with this trial idea. Would you be willing to enroll? And we had, I think, 50, 60% of the families were willing to enroll. So we felt like we didn't need to do necessarily a pilot. And in fact, if you know a little bit about RCTs, you don't want to look at the data too soon because you lose your power. So you have to kind of just embark on this journey of a couple hundred patients and not look at it until you've kind of met statistical parameters.
Excellent. So what did you find? What did the study results find, and what were your conclusions?
Mm-hmm. One disappointing thing is that we had to power the study to Cobb angle, which is kind of our primary measure in scoliosis, but it's a two-dimensional measurement. Now, there wasn't enough data to power it for a three-dimensional correction or even the sagittal plane or the side view. There wasn't enough feasibility to power the study to look at patient-reported outcome measures, because for patient-reported outcome measures, you need lots and lots and lots of patients. So we powered it for Cobb angle, and we found no difference at 2 years between the high implant density and low implant density groups.
Okay. And did you expect to find that, or was it surprising? What was your kind of, what did you think you were going to find?
I think the surgeons that prefer placing high density pedicle screws thought, and actually still think, that there's a clinical benefit to having maximal density. And it'll be interesting to see over time, like, does this trial actually impact clinical care?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a really strong bias on the part of surgeons that you know, we never met a pedicle, that we didn't want instrument, and that having maximal density is the best route. Unfortunately, we weren't able to collect 3D data on the entire cohort. That had been our initial plan, to do 3D reconstructions on all the patients, but due to calibration and lack of biplanar imaging, we were only able to do 3D analysis on radiographically on about 50 patients, but we didn't find a difference there either. But I think the surgeons that participated in the trial that still strongly feel like they like to use a lot of screws use that as a discussion point, that I think they're still hopeful that you know, they're imparting additional rotational correction, which in a primarily female population, a primarily adolescent population, that rotational correction is important for cosmesis and for appearance concerns. So it's interesting. I thought we were going to come up with a definitive conclusion that would answer this question and suddenly people would be using fewer screws. But I think ultimately, even the best designed RCT only applies to its own specific cohort and its own specific question, and it may not be generalizable across all of scoliosis.
Interesting. And when was your data first presented, I guess? I mean, it's in publication only a couple of months now, but I imagine the data came out earlier.
We were working, trying to get just the last little bit of follow-up, because it's quite difficult to get 2 year follow-up on adolescent scoliosis patients. So we spent a little extra time trying to get a little more follow-up and complete the cohort. We presented it, and it was best paper at POSNA several years back. And then we submitted it to New England Journal of Medicine, where it was reviewed but not accepted. And then we went through the editorial process at JPJS.
Excellent.
I think one interesting thing is this study was not funded by any type of industry partners. It had no industry support. It was completely funded by ORIEF, and Scoliosis Research Society also helped us. So we're thankful for their investment, but it was a little bit of a shoestring budget.
Yeah,
but we're able to avoid industry, industry ties.
Sure. I think certainly that would have brought another level of, critique to the study, perhaps, especially, if you found one versus the other, especially if you found that more screws are better. I would imagine that would be the criticism. But, given that and what you're starting to see and hear from surgeons who now know about the data, what do you think are some future directions, for, related investigations based on this?
For sure. I think now that we're in the field of computer navigation and robotics, the question is not only how many screws, but like which screws, what was your pedicle fill, what was your insertional torque, what's the bone quality, probably patient-specific factors like genetics and anticipated activity level for the recovery. So I would like to go back and do that computer-aided study where we do standard of care, whatever it currently is, versus kind of a patient-specific computer-aided screw array design. And maybe now that I'm smart about RCTs, maybe include some short-term outcome measures like length of stay and 90-day return to the OR, still go after that 2 and 5 year data, but realize that can be quite difficult to achieve. And then also kind of provide reassurance to patients. I'd like to do a little bit more as far as like engaging patients in the trial design and making sure that patients and families are interested in this question. At least from a patient safety standpoint, do a little bit more on that end to I guess recruit all stakeholders in the study. This RCT was very much a surgeon-driven study and a question that primarily interested surgeons, and potentially recruitment might be easier if it was something that patients cared about.
And maybe as the last follow-up question to that, what are some of the patient and patient family perspectives that you think might be interesting to include if you were to investigate something like this again?
For sure. Well, I guess in the time since 2011, the field has moved on and my life has moved on. So now I do actually a lot of motion sparing scoliosis procedures, and I have a lot of interest in vertebral body tethering and other ways where we can hold off on the fusion. So I've done some work in that arena, talking with patients and doing shared decision making, and I would like to kind of implement some of that shared decision analysis in the process of doing, an AI or a robotic design screw array for families, finding a way to kind of translate that and make sense to them. But I think patients want safety. They want their child to come out neurologically intact without an infection, with level shoulders and a level waist. They want a quick recovery. And I think maybe not burdening them too much with the details. I think that was one struggle we had in the MIMO trial, is that the families really worried a lot. Like preoperatively, my patients who were randomized did a lot of extra worrying. The parents, you can imagine, were very worried. So I guess the next trial somehow would like to make it easier on the patients.
Right. Well, clearly this was quite an accomplishment to, design the study, enroll the patients, push it through to completion. For anybody who's been involved in something like this, I think they can appreciate that. I think that about wraps it up for this podcast. Again, the paper is in the February, I believe it's February 7th, JBJS 2024. Is that correct?
I think it came out in print. One final comment. I was teaching at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and one of the surgeons said, the best thing about this paper is that if I miss a pedicle and I'm struggling trying to get a really hard screw in, I just move on because I know I can get by dropping one or two pedicle screws without any impact on the construct for like a regular routine surgery. And I found that in my practice too. Like, I think there was a little bit of an ego factor where, like, I want that x-ray with every single screw at every single level and all the screws in a nice cascade. Is it really worth 5, 10, 20 minutes of operative time struggling on a difficult level? And I think that paper has kind of given surgeons the permission just to move on, keep the flow of the case. And if it's not in a critical position at the top or bottom of the construct, you can just keep moving and finish it off and not feel ashamed.
Yeah, well, that's a good take-home point, and certainly something that the surgeon in real time may be able to use, you know, in the middle of the case if they know the data and they feel comfortable with those results. Well, I want to thank you again. I've been talking with Dr. Noelle Larson at the Mayo Clinic about implant density on adolescent idiopathic scoliosis fusion and their recent randomized trial in the JBJS. Thank you again so much for your time. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thanks so much. So thanks to my co-authors and everyone who helped get this study done.
Awesome.